Hi, this is Carol Grant with United Country Virginia Realty, and I am here talking about Kerr Lake Living. Or is it Car Lake Living? Bugs Island Lake Living? Well, whatever you call it, depends on where you're located. But wherever you are located on this beautiful 800 miles of shoreline, I am certain you have a story. So let's dive into today's story.
All right, so we're here today with Julia Crocker. Julia is a 50-year resident of Clarksville, Virginia. Julia, tell us what on earth could have possibly brought you to Clarksville, Virginia?
Well, my husband and I decided we needed to buy a house. And, of course, being me, I wanted something on a river or a lake. And since we were living in Washington, D.C. at the time, that kind of discouraged it because everything in Washington on water starts at $1.5 million and went up. And that was 50 years ago. So we were down here one day. My mother-in-law lived in South Hill, so we came to visit her quite regularly. And I came over here to see Prestwood, because I'm I like old houses. That's my thing. And when we got here, Prestwood was closed, so we decided, let's look around town. So we were driving around the streets, and my husband said, look, and there was my house with a for sale sign on it. And I said, can we look at that, honey? And he says, oh, all right, if you want to. And of course, that was the biggest mistake he ever made. So I walked up on the front porch, and it started talking to me. The minute I got there, it started talking to me. I'm crazy, I know that.
No.
But it's true. And the more it talked, the more I listened. And at that point, I didn't care what it looked like inside. It was my house. So we put a down payment, and then we bought it 6 weeks later. And that was on my 28th birthday, I believe, that we were down here that weekend. And we closed on the winter solstice on the 21st.
How about that? And then what year was it?
79, I think.
Gotcha. All right, so once you got here, I know you had mentioned that you were a bookkeeper, and your husband was a security guard, and y'all were living at that time down in Carolina, is that correct?
No.
Where were you?
We were living in Washington.
That's right.
We moved from Washington to here.
That's right. But you have worked in Durham, though.
Oh, Lord, yes, for 50 years. But the main thing was that I had a very unpleasant experience with my job in Washington. I was there for 9 years, and it turns out that the man who ran the company had a hobby of giving all of his female employees nervous breakdowns. I mean, this is true. I've got the history of all of them he did, and I was one of the last ones. And by the time I left that job and left Washington, I wasn't unable to do anything. I couldn't work. I couldn't think. I couldn't do anything. So I came down here to recover.
Very good.
This was my recovery.
Well, it's a beautiful place to recover in.
It is, yes. Now, we came down here, and we opened a music store. I don't know whether you knew that or not, but we had a music store here for 5 years. And it helped to, never made any money, but at least gave us something. We felt like we were doing something in the community. And then I started getting work in Durham. So from that point, we closed the store, closed the shop. My brother ran it for a year or two. And
what was the name of the shop?
Was Mint Julep and Associates, I think.
All right, so I know that you've told me that you did some acting, your husband has done acting, and something also that most people probably don't know about you, Julia, is that you were a writer as well.
Yes, I am.
Okay. And so you have a lot of different names that you go by. And sitting right here at my kitchen table, I've got one of your books. Mm-hmm. It's a series that you wrote.
Yes.
And I would have never known that Julia Crocker wrote it because no. What name are you going by here with this?
This is Meriwether Shipley.
Meriwether Shipley.
Yes.
And I showed this to Bill Baker and he's like, well, who is Meriwether Shipley? I said, it's Julia Crocker. And he was very amazed, you know, that you have books in print and your husband as well.
Yes.
So give me a little bit of background information about that as well.
Well, my husband has been a writer since he was old enough to write, which is about 4, because he was quite, what's that word anyway? He was very progressive in his stuff. Never, still can't do math, but he can write anything. And he loves poetry. He fell in love with poetry. And that's all he thinks, eats, reads. It's just his life.
Mm. Very good. What about the acting career? And then you, as well today, you brought in a calendar that that your husband was in as well. But both of you have an acting background as well, correct?
Well, you can't really call it a background. When we came here, we decided, well, actually, we had extra'd in a movie down in Durham.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was picked out of 1,800 extras to do a scene with, what's her name? Anyway, a very famous actress. But there were all these extras, and they picked him out to do the scene. And it didn't get shot because they ran out of time, but he went through wardrobe and makeup and the whole business. And Lauren Bacall. It was with Lauren Bacall.
Oh, wow.
And then we went to another extra in Richmond, and they picked him out again of all the extras. And they put him into the movie, but the director was an asshole and decided, he looked at my husband and said, who are you? And Milton told him, and he says, you don't look like a maitre d'. And he says, of course I'm not. I'm an actor. You know, and just the guy was unreasonable. And everybody on the really high professionals, they had a lot of famous people in that one. And they couldn't stand this guy either. He was just an asshole. And I don't think the movie did very well because everybody on it was miserable.
Yes.
But then we decided if he was that popular just from picking him out, you know, in an extra line, that he ought to get an agent. So we got an agent down in North Carolina, and they kept us busy for 20 years. And Avanti Cards picked him up, and he did probably 10 or 12 different cards for them. And I did commercials. He did some commercials, too. He did one for Thompson Cadillac Oldsmobile. And I did, my big commercial was for the insulin. What was it? Eli Lilly was making an artificial insulin called, what is the name? Doesn't matter. They don't think they make it anymore. But anyway, they chose me out of everybody. They did a countrywide search for that one. And for some reason, the lady said, that's her.
Oh, wow.
And I got it.
Yay!
And was that person for 5 years. So.
Oh, that's amazing.
Uh-huh. I had domestic, international, and internet, all three. So
wow.
It was a big commercial.
That's great, Julia. I had no idea.
I'm famous.
Right here on little old 4th Street in Clarksville,
right.
Virginia. All right, so let's talk about the series that you have, and it's called Cassandra and the G.I.P.I. So tell me about that.
Well, actually, my writing started with the Sun newspaper. The first job I got when I was here was a typesetter for the newspaper. And I asked them if I could do an article, you know, do a column in old houses. And they said, sure, you know, why not?
Right.
So that's where my articles came from. But this is a book about when I was in high school, I had a teacher who lived with three other teachers who were Army. They'd been through the Army, but they'd sort of lost their schooling in the middle, so they went back and were finishing their degrees, and teaching school was how they were supporting themselves. But I was so impressed with them, because one of the men in particular was a man named Mr. Welsh, and Mr. Welsh was the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet, but he had a case of PTSD that was just terrible. Right. They said he'd go home at night and just sit on the edge of his bed and chain smoke, and that's all he would do. Mm. And he couldn't keep the job at the school because it was just too irregular. Mm. But that was sort of what got me started on this, was the fact that the Korean War was in the early 50s, and then Vietnam came along in the 60s and 70s, and there wasn't that big a gap between them. Ben, we talk a lot about the greatest generation and about the Vietnam people, but they very seldom talk about the Korean War, mm-hmm. which was a terrible war too, and we shouldn't have been there. So that was what gave me the idea of this girl, Cassandra, who falls in love with this GI who's making a living as a private investigator. And this is in Washington, D.C. It takes place in 1969 in Washington, which is one of the most, to me, exciting times in the whole city mm-hmm. life, because everything was just up in the air and the hippies invaded DuPont Circle. And it was just wonderful. There was always happenings and things going on. And it just was a fun time to live there, and nobody's talked about it. I looked up the Great March of 67, which is at the time was the largest bringing in of people that Washington had ever had, and it got about this much space on the internet. And I said, yes. No, we cannot forget that march.
Right.
And so this is one of the incidents, big incidents, and this is the march.
How about that? Yeah, 69 was the year I was born, Julia.
Oh, baby.
Baby, that's right. I don't feel like a baby.
No, I was in my prime in 69.
I bet you were. Something tells me you had a really good prime.
I did. I was hippie.
Yes. Well, now, speaking of writing for the newspaper, you have also another alias that you go by for writing on the paper called Auntie Bellum.
Uh-huh. That's what I wrote. Because I'd never written before. I'd never had anything published. And I decided that would be a really nice nom de plume for somebody who was writing about old houses.
That's right.
That's who I was.
And I have stumbled across a few of your articles actually still out there on the internet. And this was an article you wrote for, was it The Sun or The News Progress?
I wrote for both of them, so it okay. could have been either.
Gotcha. So I find them to be extremely interesting.
Thank
so what I would like to do, with your permission, on some of my Kerlake Living magazines that I print, maybe even run a couple of those in there.
That'd
about some
fine.
Of the homes, because you've brought me today a nice file of those, so I appreciate that. Now, Julia, here some time back, I sent out, I guess maybe 30 letters to people around Clarksville that own older homes. I love a really good home with a good background.
I got it.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
That.
Yes, you do. So I love to market them. I love to write about them. I love to learn about them. So I got this phone call from a lady, and she had a house for sale, and it was you. And when I went to look up the information on the home, all I could find was Julia Panic. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a Julia Crocker, because you kept that house in your name.
Well, it was given to me as a wedding present by my husband.
That's right. And so all these years,
it still
belongs to you. But when I sat down and talked with you at the pizza pub for our first meeting, you were just a wealth of history and knowledge about Clarksville, about this home. And, you know, for someone who doesn't know anything about the home, they're going to say, well, the house may not be worth much, but that house is priceless.
It is.
Because of its history.
Yes.
So if you don't mind, could you start wherever you want to start?
All right. I'm going to start with William Byrd.
All right. William Byrd.
We're going to go way back because William Byrd was contracted to run the dividing line between North Carolina and Virginia back in about 1715 or something. And when he was riding through here, he came through Clarksville. In fact, he named Buffalo Springs, and he named quite a few of the things that we still have around here. They came from him. And in fact, I read his Exploring of the Line because I'm interested anyway. And I did run across one of the people that he stayed with twice, because he came through twice, and that man's name was Aaron Pinson. In fact, up the road a little bit, off the way to South Boston, is a place called Aaron's Creek,
mm-hmm.
and that's named after Aaron Pinson.
Okay.
And Mr. Pinson was, at the time, settling. You know, you had to live in a place for like 7 years and build a house and plant some crops before you could get your land grant. You know, they issued it, but if you didn't do the work, you didn't get to keep it.
Right.
So he'd been put in there to settle a land grant. So as soon as his land grant that he was working on was finished, he and his family came along and applied for three of them themselves. And they happened to be right along the Roanoke. I believe they're all three on the Roanoke. Although it could have been, I don't know, it might have been the Stanton, but it was all along that river someplace. And the first thing Mr. Royster did was to go up and buy the section of land right across from Okeechobee Island, which is the two rivers, the Staunton and the Dan River, come together to form the lower Roanoke, right, mm-hmm. at Clarksville. And where they come together, they had built an island that was occupied by the Okeechobee Indians, and they required if you wanted to cross the river, you had to pay them a tax. So that was where that piece of land was, and Mr. Royster bought it and put in a tavern there because there were always people crossing the river. And, of course, the first guy closest to the river got all the business because getting over that river, especially if you were taking, you know, barges with mules and anything else, was going to be probably a day's work in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it must have looked mighty good to have a tavern right there, and a very friendly one, apparently. So Mr. Royster put up his tavern there. And there it stood for at least 100 years.
Mm.
So anyway, he bought the property from Aaron Pinson's, what I'm telling you. But I can't tell you how many acres he bought because the handwriting and the ink were so faded on the records up in the deed book that it showed it was multiple acres, but I couldn't say how many.
Mm-hmm.
But he apparently over the years had developed quite a thing there. Not only did he have to have the tavern, of course, but he had to have a place for the animals and the loads to wait overnight. And apparently, I know he had a tack house back there because I was digging, as I do, occasionally out there. And I ran across a bunch of things. It was mainly like burned cement and things like that, but mm-hmm. there were also a lot of leather in there, mm-hmm. and a lot of metal. So I'm assuming that's the tack house that burned down.
So the Royster Tavern, then, mm-hmm. is actually your house.
Yes, it is.
And which we are getting ready to auction.
Yes.
So this home, then, would date back to what year, would you say?
I'd say 1735.
1735.
Or thereabouts, yes.
Yes. Now, was that when it was built, or is that records that you are seeing that the tavern was established?
That was just the deed being transferred.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha.
So, but Mr., well, I can't think of his name now, but Bill will be able to tell you, the uh-huh. guy who came over said that he looked at the house and he says, "You have a surprise here." He says, "It looks Victorian, but this house is a great deal older."
So this was a home inspector?
Yeah, he was, but he specialized in old houses.
Okay.
He's the one who rebuilt or helped to stabilize Bill Baker's old house.
Okay.
And he was sort of a guru.
Yes.
And so he went through and showed me that it's built on 12 by 12 timbers, which mm-hmm. is big. And it's full of handmade nails and pegs. It's not even...
Right, yes, because they used to just use wooden pegs. That's yeah. right.
And it had built. It was built in three sections, actually. And I'm still not sure in my mind, even after all these years, who came first. But the... because one section and the other were bolted together, and they still are.
Yes.
You just see bolts where they've wow. bolted them together. And I don't know who was the first one and who was the second one.
Gotcha.
I think that the main house is the, I don't know how to describe it, but I'll show you if you'd like.
Okay.
But anyway, that I think that was the main house, and then they built the other side. Another two rooms, or was it three? It's two rooms, which are now the kitchen and the and my dining room were added on. Mm-hmm. And then there was another room on the other end that they told me was rotten. And Mr. Fuller decided to take it down by using the fire truck to pull it down.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the fire truck hooked up to it all day and ran it and still couldn't get it down. So I think that his estimation of its decay was a little
I would
wrong.
Say, yeah. Wasn't quite so rotten after all, was it?
No. But when we bought the house, there was a little staircase going up to that middle section there where the dining room is now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually the main entrance to the tavern right there.
Okay.
And then the other room off to the right to Dev, to the left of that, I think was Mr. Royster's home. I think it was where he stayed or whoever was managing the tavern mm-hmm. stayed there. And in fact, I had dreams for years that there were a whole bunch of rooms back there, but I don't think so. It was only the one.
Right.
And that's what got torn off, and there's still the footprint of the room, and I have a few pieces from it, but it's all gone.
Gotcha. So, you know, I hear you when you say about the maybe feeling like there was something else there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I talked with you previously, you had said that there may be some lingering spirits in that home. And let me tell you,
uh-huh.
you know, I am not, let's say I'm not fascinated by personally with spirits in that realm. But I will say when I first went down to that basement where the kitchen is, and that is the that was where the kitchen was when it was the Royster Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly felt a presence
yes,
there.
Yes, they're still down there.
And it kind of engulfs you.
It does.
And I could get a sense, and I don't know if it was because I have a catering background when I know what the hustle and bustle feels like, but I could feel it there. I could feel it. And so tell me maybe a little bit about that aspect of the home.
Okay. Well, first
buckle up. Get close to that microphone, Julia. We want to hear this one.
The first time I met them was when I went up to the front door to look at the house.
Mm-hmm. And now this is when you first saw the house?
This is when I first saw the house.
Okay.
I walked up under the porch and they started talking to me. And they told me that it was for sale. And that it was owned by the lady next door, and she was going to finance it for me.
Okay.
Which she did. They even told me the cost, and it was all correct. So I thought, okay, I'm talking to some folks, but it turns out that the lady who owned it during the Depression ran a boarding house there.
Okay.
And the people I was talking to there were the boarders. In fact, the main lady I talked to, I think she had a sewing shop there and did all of her sewing there. Because every time I used to make costumes for stage, and whenever I got in trouble, she'd come over and tell me what to do. It was really nice to have her there. But they, I think that the spirits hang along just long enough for you to learn who they are and what they're trying to tell you. They mm-hmm. always try to tell you something. And once they've said what they're going to say, they go away. Mm. So those were a trip. And then...
So you don't feel them quite like you did when you first moved there?
No, I don't. I think most of them have moved on. There's still a lady upstairs. Did you see? You didn't feel her probably.
No.
But the room, the upstairs on the left.
Okay, so when I get to the top of the stairs, I'm going to take a left. Yep, know which one you're talking about.
Window
yep,
is.
Exactly.
There's still an old lady up there. And the first thing that happened when we moved in was we took all the wood stoves out.
Okay.
Because I wasn't going to be using wood stoves.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm from Washington, D.C. I don't use wood stoves. And when the men came in to take that furnace, take that stove out, they'd pull it and it got pushed right back into the wall again. And this happened 5 or 6 times. They'd give it a mighty pull and then it would slide back into place.
Oh my gosh.
But that lady, people have felt her since then. And she's probably still in that room. And she was a mother-in-law, I think, of someone who owned it. I don't know her name, but I have known the names of several of them.
Mm-hmm.
The my favorite one.
Yes.
I had a very famous psychic who came in, and she was a student of Thomas Jefferson.
Yes.
And she was chasing this son of Thomas Jefferson, who's called Thomas Jefferson Beale.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born during the one of Jefferson's elections. And they felt that since he was the product of his black mistress, that it would be scandal. So mm-hmm. they silenced the baby and sent it over to his former teacher to raise him. And Beale's got his own story, but that's in Bedford County. But the at any rate... She's been trying to find him. And after all of my seances and everything were over, I was walking, I was standing at the door of the bathroom, which is off the dining room.
Yes.
And you can see all the way to the front door. It's about a 35-foot span there.
That's right.
Maybe longer. And I saw this man standing in the hallway looking into my front room. And it was Thomas Jefferson.
Oh my gosh.
Jefferson has a very distinctive profile. And
right?
The way he walks and talks and everything. He didn't speak to me, but I saw him. And Milton came in and says, "Honey, there's some guy wandering around here." So my husband saw him too. So I think that's the Thomas Jefferson Beale. And he changed his name to Venable. I think it was
Francis
Venable. Thank
you
very much.
Yes.
And he's actually buried in the Clarksville Cemetery.
How about that?
And I think she found him. She'd been looking for him. She found all the other Jeffersons but that one. And I think Mary found him too.
Right in that home. Oh my gosh, that gives me the willies.
It doesn't need to. The fun part now, there's this group that used to come through. It was a bunch of Teamsters who came through. I don't even know when. They came through more than once.
Yes.
But I never tracked them to find out when. But this party would start. And it went on all night, and there was drinking and shouting and just men having fun.
Yes.
And one day my husband looked at me and said, "Honey, do you hear that?" I said, "Of course I do." And that's the first time he'd heard anybody in the house. But that was quite a crowd, and they came through 6 or 7 times. They were regulars on that trail.
So I want to make sure that my listeners are understanding. This group of Teamsters is mm-hmm. not real people as far as flesh and blood.
Yeah, they're the ones who drove the trucks and the a Teamster is somebody who runs a like right now, they're the head of the tractor trailers and
yes,
things.
Yes.
But that's what they were doing. They're the guys that drove the whatever they were hauling, whether it was animals or tobacco or whatever. But they were just a bunch of guys who ran that trail regularly, and they always stopped at the Boyd Tavern.
But the voices that you were hearing were their ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sure. That's what I was. I guess that's what I was trying to get at. Because my father was a Teamster. He was a truck driver. So I know what the Teamsters are. Mm-hmm. You know, they are a union. So they continued their path then.
Yes.
And would stop by that home.
That's right.
And wow.
I got a million of them.
Oh my goodness. Ooh, okay. Well, let's move along then. Because that's really fascinating to me, that you both could hear that. Sometimes it's just one or the other might hear something, but you were both hearing that in that home.
Yeah. And then I will at this juncture tell you about the soldier in the dining room.
Okay.
Because he kind of came in later. I don't know whether... I don't think he'd been there from the time I started. I think he just came through later.
Yes.
But he lived there in the dining room. And when Mary came through, she talked to him. We have his name. He's in the book for that regiment of the Civil War. But he was...
Now, Mary is who?
The psychic.
Okay.
And she stood up and she was... going like this because
so she was rubbing her leg, yes.
And my husband got up at the same time and he was rubbing the other one and saying, boy, that hurts. And it turns out that he had his horse roll over on him when he was in one of the battles in the war. So that's why his legs were hurting him so much, because they'd been damaged during the war.
Right.
And he came back, I guess, to live with his sister or whoever it was that was in the house at the time. And he was in the living room. And we talked to him a little bit, too.
Oh, my gosh, Julia. I have goosebumps. I can't take it. I really do.
And Mary said, I hear a song. She said, it's Wait for the Wagon. And I said, oh, so I started singing it. And that just sort of made the spirits even happier, because that's a Civil War song.
How about that? Can you sing it?
Sure. Will you come with me, my Phyllis, to yon blue mountain free, where something smells the sweetest, come rove along with me. It's every Sunday morning when I am by your side. I'll jump into the wagon and we'll all take a ride. Wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon and we'll all take a ride.
That's great.
Sorry about the singing.
So, Julia, take us back to a time when the Royster Tavern was no longer needed.
Well, the Royster Tavern, this is my theory.
Okay.
You know, I don't know this for sure, but in about 1830, they decided that they needed to rebuild mm-hmm. Main Street because it was too steep for the animals to pull the loads up into town.
Right.
And that's why the tavern was so good, is because they came in on the little side channel there mm-hmm. where they didn't have anything like as much trouble to pulling up the load. So they took out a loan so they could re-elevate the road. And you can still see the blocks. If you look over there by Clayton Callahan's, you can see the blocks that they put in.
Yes.
But then the Civil War came along, and they couldn't pay the loan on it any longer.
Hmm.
So the town lost its charter for about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And that, I think, is when it became a private home. I think that's when Mr. Venable bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'm not sure, I haven't been able to prove any of these dates, because the deed that I got in 1979 stated that this was the Venable house on the Venable lot on the Venable Road.
Yes.
But it became 4th Street in 1818.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just not sure how that happened. I haven't been able to find anything about that. But anyway, that's when the house changed hands. And then it was during, I believe, Mr. Venable's residence that he called in Jacob Holt.
Mm-hmm.
And he, Mr. Holt, of course, being who he is, turned the place into an absolute fairyland. I mean, he's put the tower on the top.
Mm-hmm.
He put the fancy ornamentation on the porch. He made bay windows out of three walls just because he felt like it and could.
Yes, yes.
And that kind of thing. But he was, and he put in the Palladian window upstairs as part of his work, too.
So tell me, just real quick, for those who do not know who Jacob Holt is.
Okay.
Who is?
Jacob Holt is a builder who came from someplace a little bit farther north from here and established his business in Warrenton, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. In fact, they have his original... His residence there. But Mr. Holt was very clever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some magnificent houses all over North Carolina and Virginia.
Yes.
They're very... You can tell one of his houses at once, especially because of the doorways. He loved to do these fancy doorways. And once you've seen one, you'll know them all. I have a whole book of them.
Yes, I bet you do. Yes, you do. Yeah, all in Julia's writings, she has some of beautiful work that Jacob Holt has done. And you're right. You can spot it a mile away. So the work that he did on this house, I like to call it gingerbread. The gingerbreading that he did on this home is just very
spectacular.
Beautiful. It truly
is.
It is. So once Jacob Holt did his thing, what do you feel like he added to the home as far as space is concerned? Did he add any kind of, I know you said he did the dome on the upstairs and all, but were there any other rooms added on that he did? Because this was an original two up, two down colonial
at first.
Uh-huh. So was he the one that added all the other rooms, or did some of those come?
I think he might have added what we call the Victorian room.
Okay.
Which is the one off the porch there as you walk in, the first room you saw on the right.
Yes.
That, I think, is a Jacob Holt room.
Okay.
But it doesn't have a whole lot of ornamentation in it. It's just, you know, a very basic kind of room. But when you get into the bay windows, especially... Oh, they're just beautiful. What mm-hmm. can you say? They're just beautiful.
Yes, the whole home just really, honestly, it's a rare gem, is what it is.
Have you ever seen Eureka?
Yes.
That is Holt.
Yes.
That is Jacob Holt, I think, at his best.
Right. Exactly.
It looks like a riverboat coming up the river.
Yes.
It is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It does. So tell me a little bit as far as, I guess I want to know what kind of things have you done since you've been there to the home? You put in new electrical and all of that.
I put on new electric and plumbing, and I put in a heating system,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't work now.
But that's
did
okay.
When I put it in.
That's right.
And I haven't really done a whole lot more to it.
Right. But the home itself, because of all the stuff that's in there, that front door is
beautiful.
Unbelievable with the, mm-hmm. the blue glass. That how old would you say that door is?
I think that's the colonial.
Really?
I do, because I think the doors are probably Jacob Holt, but I think they could be him. But the circular
yep.
glass above may have been original.
Okay.
I don't know, because that entrance was much later.
Yes, that's right.
That's a Holt entrance there.
That's right.
And the original one was down where I told you it was, where it is now my office and my laundry room.
Right, right. In which you enclosed the laundry.
Yes, I enclosed the laundry room.
Was that a porch at one time?
It was a porch when we bought it with a staircase that came up.
Okay.
And I was wondering for years why I had a staircase going there. And, of course, it made it really nice because the when it came time to move into it, I just had my brother back the U-Haul up to the porch.
Yes.
And extend the thing. And all of that big furniture, which came with me from Washington, came right in like gentlemen.
Yes.
You know, I didn't have to turn anything on its side. They just walked in those big doors.
How about that? Well, is there any other history? So as far as I know, we've gotten up to the point where Jacob Holt did the restoration on that home and the Victorian remodel, I guess I would call it that. Is there any further history information on the home from that point on that would be interesting?
No.
No.
As far as I can tell, there isn't, because it was a family home. And generally, during the Depression, it was a boarding house, because
okay.
to have a house that large, you couldn't afford it unless you rented it out.
Right, right.
So they did have a bathroom upstairs in the attic, which I had to take out because the bathtub was about to land in my dining room.
Yes,
which
it was
I
a very
would be a bad thing.
That would be a very
it's
bad
a
thing.
Big 400-pound tub.
Yes.
But aside from that, I don't really know anything, and nothing that I know of happened.
Yes. So did the boarding house have a name that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. It was just more of that people knew that it was there.
Probably, it may have had a name, but nobody's ever talked about it. Yeah. I haven't been able to find anybody in town who knows anything about that house.
Right.
I've talked to the old families. I've talked to everybody. And they all thought it was haunted, which it was. And all the school children used to cross to the other side of the street when they came by from on the way to the school bus.
Yes.
So, you know, and I've had several old people tell me I should tear it down and burn it down.
Oh, no,
so,
we can't do that.
No, I mean, I don't know why people are so afraid of their history.
Yeah. No, that house has to remain. I mean,
I think
that,
so.
That's probably one of the first buildings in Clarksville, would you say?
It's probably one of the first big ones. Some
yes.
of the littler ones might still
sure.
be older, but I think it's the first prosperous business in town.
Yes. Well, that is truly rich history, and I, you know, we should be indebted to you for...
I wish I could have done more.
I know
I
you
really do.
Well, you've had some health issues that have kind of hindered
yeah.
you from doing the things that you want to do, and
yeah.
but it looks like you're coming along a little bit better right now.
Well, yeah.
Indeed. Tell me yes. a little bit about the tavern. Obviously, you know, I know you don't have a whole lot of information that is written down, but it typically a tavern of that day, what would be the feel of that tavern? What would it have and what would it do for the community or the travelers?
Okay, we'll start out with the fact that it's listed in the Virginia Gazette out of Williamsburg in the 1750s.
Okay.
And that, I think, is pretty nice evidence. And that's online. And one time it was advertising a horse that they found.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if anybody's looking for it, you can find it at the Boy Tavern. Because obviously he had a stable there. Not the Boy Tavern, the Royster Tavern, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And the another time it was a man who was selling his property down here. And they said, for information how to find the place, go to Royster's Tavern. So it's listed twice.
And that
in
was
the Virginia Gazette, which was the newspaper out of Williamsburg.
How about that? So now in the tavern itself, they would have, of course, you were going to have your alcohol. You're going to have your food for weary travelers. What are other things would you say that a tavern would have, and how would you know?
It would take, because taverns are fairly universal.
Yes.
And they took care of your needs.
Okay.
For a traveler. I mean, you were tired, you were hungry, and so it had good food, it had good beds, and good company. That's another thing. It had to have good company.
And what were the three things that you told me that a tavern had to have?
If you will, an alehouse keep three things in store in mind or something. You have to have a feather bed. A chamber with a feather bed, a chimney, and a hey nonny nonny, hey nonny nonny, hey nonny no, hey nonny no, hey nonny no.
And we all would know what that means is a hoe.
when I first went in the kitchen, it was painted battleship green because all of the post-World War paint was on sale and everybody had to be green or gray because that's where all the paint came from. So it had been painted this nasty, nasty green, and I wanted to paint something friendlier. So I brought a nice Williamsburg gray and started painting over the battleship green, and it all turned robin's egg blue. And as I was painting, it was turning bluer and bluer, and I could feel all these women assembling behind me and grumbling. They didn't like it. They just didn't like that at all. And I said, turned around and I said, "Hey, ladies, I don't like this either. It was supposed to be gray." And they all went off in a huff. They're still down there.
So you think that was the group of ladies of the evening?
And also the cooks and the servers. And, you know, they had, it took a hell of a lot of people to run the tavern.
Yes, it did.
Because just getting the food up to everybody and down again and washing the dishes. Oh, and that's another thing Mary the Psychic said.
Yes.
She said that it was part of the Underground Railroad.
Oh, wow.
And my husband's first comment was, "That's ridiculous. How can that be?" And I got online and started looking. And because of the fact that Clarksville was one of the few places you could safely cross the Roanoke.
Yes.
When people were escaping north, if they were coming up from North Carolina or South Carolina, they had to cross the Roanoke River, and that was the place to do it.
So you think it was part of the Underground Railroad?
I do. In fact, Mary felt those slaves.
The presence.
Yes.
How about that? Very good information. So, Julia, as we wrap up the podcast session, can you tell me maybe one of your favorite times that you had when you were in the house, and maybe just something that was your favorite part of your life as well?
Oh, well, I think one of my favorite memories is the day that I actually got the whole front lawn. I mean, the front hallway is probably 20 feet long. One of the guys who was measuring it said it was the size of a mobile home.
Yes.
And that's just my front hallway. But when I got the beautiful whole beginning opening of the house and then the long hallway and then got the ceilings and painted in the dining room so you could walk in the front door and have this gorgeous look at what the house could be.
All the way through.
I couldn't do any more than that, but it just was special.
I bet it was. So if you could pinpoint one era of your life that stood out the most, that you enjoyed the most, what would it be?
Well, it would have to be when we were acting and we were making movies. I really enjoyed that. The house lends itself to three or four eras. I could take it all the way back to 1730, mm-hmm. and I could take it up to 1890, mm-hmm. and just in places. I couldn't do the whole house that way, but I could do enough to do a small film on a certain subject and in a certain area. In fact, we closed off the front room and just used a piece of the hallway. And I don't remember what I was filming at the time, but it just looked so pretty.
There are definitely just little pieces in that home that capture
the
mind, the eye, and all of the senses.
Yes, it does.
And that, to me, makes a home priceless.
It is.
Well, I appreciate you sharing all of that.
Well, thank you for your time and your interest.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you for joining the Kerr Lake Living Podcast today with special guest Julia Crocker. You can find out more information on the sale of 105 4th Street in Clarksville at www.kerrlakeliving.com. Auction information should be available within the next week or two. Take care. See you then.